back here again. PODcast. What it is. Pride of Detroit podcast. PODcast. It's first three letters. The key, you see, to the name. I'm Christopher Fett, the adequate host at Christopher Fett, P-E-R-F-E-T-T. Jeremy Reisman is here, the fearless leader at Detroit on Lion. And my man, Ryan Matthews. Back is the motherfucking rock guy. At Ryan underscore P-O-D. And I'm going to start this off with an announcement to make. I am taking a sports commentary class taught by, brace yourselves, Rob Parker.
Oh, no. This podcast is going to get so much worse.
Shut up. I'm just seeing who remembers that name.
Don't you wish that Rob Parker's wife had married a better teacher?
Wait, you mean a better? Oh, wait, teach. Okay. You should have gone with columnist.
I don't consider him a columnist.
What he does?
He's transitioned to video, hasn't he?
Columns. He's technically on the radio most now, I think.
He pivots.
Which is funny enough because I have to write like 700 words a week now to do this class.
What, to do his work for you and for him?
No, I'm not ghostwriting. If I was ghostwriting, I'd be paid. Let's talk about the playoffs.
Playoffs?
Can you give us the drop, Ryan? No?
Which drop do you want? I'm known for a lot of drops.
The playoffs drop. I want the drop from your Jim Mora.
Skull?
Oh, playoffs.
Thank you.
Playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs?
Well, I think Jeremy put it best. As we would know, he is our resident Minnesota Vikings fans. Let's talk about your big Sunday, Jeremy.
Hey, it was a hell of a Sunday. There were two amazing games, and I know I'm just going to be hammered for being, I guess, right about Minnesota. I don't know. I guess that's your angle, is that I was so right about the Vikings.
No, I'm once again on this wagon that you are Jeremy Reisman, fearless leader, managing editor Detroit Online of Pride of Detroit. You are much akin to the Florida fan chanting SEC when it comes to an Alabama-Georgia championship. You should not be rooting in any capacity for a divisional rival.
I'm not rooting for them. I enjoy watching them play. I enjoy an amazing finish that's a once-in-a-lifetime thing for a generation of fans. That's not rooting.
Oh, wow, look, this is supposed to be the toughest division in all of football, according to NFC North fans, and all you can do is like give them compliments instead of take them down as soon as they appear.
Yeah, I guess I'm guilty of liking good football. I'm sorry, Chris.
It's not good football.
How can you say that? That was the best game of the year, for sure. One of the best playoff games in recent memory, and that's saying a lot because we've been spoiled with some amazing playoff games.
Case Keenum.
Top 10 quarterback this year.
All right, my head's spinning. I can't do this anymore. It was an incredible game. The thing that I appreciate the most of it, Jeremy, the best thing that came out of it was you changing your Twitter name.
Oh, I missed this.
Yes. My Twitter name is now Irate Viking Saints Reaction Videos because that's my favorite.
Irate, not like he's rating them, not like irate as in like I'm mad.
No, yes. Okay. You have to enunciate.
Yeah.
Because in moments like this, it's my favorite thing to do is just watch all the reaction videos, and you have to have like a keen eye because there are a lot of fake ones out there, a lot of people that are just trying to get a bunch of clicks because there are a lot of people like me just going through YouTube and hitting refresh, most recent, refresh, most recent, refresh. And it was the best thing that I found that night was that there was this video that I really loved when Blair Walsh missed that field goal 4 years ago or 3 years ago for the Vikings. it was a brutal Vikings reaction video of a guy just like totally heartbroken. And the same guy posted a reaction video, a legit one of him and his family watching this game when it happened. And it was obviously the exact opposite. And those are like the only videos this guy's ever uploaded either. So I thought that was pretty cool.
I love how that final play panned out. Cause I mean, you could almost see it unfold too in that when Stefon Diggs goes up for that ball and like it, you got to feel bad for Marcus Williams today, right?
Absolutely.
Because look where he is. He's a single safety, a rookie, and there's no corner help against Stefon Diggs, who's been good for a few minutes now.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. He's alone.
You look at all the criticism that Jim Caldwell got for his Hail Mary defense. That was just as bad. The Saints had two linebackers in the middle of the field covering nobody, and you knew they were going to be covering nobody because there's the Vikings can't use the middle of the field.
Sean Payton was too busy like riffing with Vikings fans going skull to give corner help against Stefon Diggs.
It was a bad play call. It was really bad by Marcus Williams, but I mean, rookies have bad plays. This just happened to be horrible things for him.
Yeah, I'm just not going to kill Marcus Williams. Some other people are saying, like, you know, he's the next Bill Buckner. It's just going to go down in history as like this guy who is just a goat. Not all capitals goat, but like, you know, hung out to dry every time that play is. Which I mean, yeah, he's going to see his name up on the replay quite a bit. But I mean, God, you're a rookie and you just got killed like that. And then Diggs having that kind of clarity to stay in bounds. Like, did you think he should, were you yelling in the moment for him to like fall out of bounds so they could get the field goal?
I mean, it looked like instinctually that was his first move to make. And I mean, that's the right thing to think. But I mean, I think when you saw him kind of like stumble and like gain his footing, he realized that there's all this green in front of him to run. So why not go for it? Because it's, you know, the end zone's just right there. So I don't know. A play like that, I don't know. I feel like those things are so once in a lifetime. Like I can't even recall anything like that happening where like the stakes were as high as they were. So
So can I put this up against the Music City Miracle? Are they in like the same category? I know they're like two completely different plays, but as far as like improbable finishes to a playoff game.
I mean, yeah, it's definitely up there. I think it might be past it just because, you know, if you were to pick a Vikings fan's brain right before that play, their best case scenario is Diggs catches that ball and gets out of bounds. That's their best case scenario. That's the best thing they could probably imagine happening at that point, because no one thinks they're going to score a touchdown. No one thinks it's even possible for them to score a touchdown from 51 yards away or whatever it was, 61 yards away. But that happened, and it's still ridiculous to me. It's still one of the most improbable things I've ever seen. It's still, I believe, the only time a playoff game has ended on a walk-off touchdown in regulation. It's incredible.
I believe that's right. The only thing I wish I could change is that, I'm not going to lie, I find Minnesota Miracle to be a very lame, very boring name. We need to come up with something better than that.
But see, that it came naturally though. Minneapolis, I think the radio announcer called it a Minneapolis Miracle, and he said that in the moment. And to me, that's a nickname. It just comes naturally. You can't push for something too hard. It just has to come.
I guess. Granted, I also think everything pales next to the kick six. So I want to just be, you know, I just don't want to call everything a miracle now.
Yeah. I need to voice my displeasure with Stefon Diggs though, because he robbed everybody of a million Vikings fans sweating it out over a Kai Forbath.
Oh my God. I was rooting for that. You don't know how hard I was rooting for him to go out of bounds there, because I wrote that article at the beginning of the playoffs saying Kai Forbath will ruin the Vikings' chances at a Super Bowl run.
I mean, he's still got a chance next week, so
he does. Yes, it's true.
And maybe maybe 2 weeks after that, we'll see.
I was gonna say, and plus the elements will be in your favor too, Jeremy. An outdoor game in Philly, yeah. perfect. True. The conditions are perfect, as the Flight of the Conchords would say.
Yeah, but I mean, kudos to him, because he kind of undid the narrative once already, because he kicked, I think it was a 51-yarder with a minute 30 to go, and you're like, well, I guess the Saints are only going to have one more chance to tie this up.
Talking about robbing, too, I want to go to our resident Vegas expert, Ryan Matthews, and I just want to know, if you had taken plus 5.5, what were you thinking as they're walking out to try to kick that extra point and instead take a knee?
I can only, like, I wish that I had put money on that game, and I wish I had put a video recorder on me, because I can only imagine the gamut of emotions that I would run through. Like insane. Well, hold on. Even starting back from like the dig situation, because you're furious, because the only thing you're thinking is like, they're going to come out and kick a field goal. It's Minnesota, so I'm even doubly mad. But then with all the pandemonium, you're probably just screaming, oh, who cares? Who cares? Maybe they'll just call the game. And then having everybody come back onto the field and then line up and take the knee, like, I would be celebrating harder than any Minnesota Vikings fan was celebrating for the Diggs touchdown. You can guarantee that.
What if you were on the other side of it? Would that be enough to finally get you to quit?
Oh no, I'd have to get back on the train next week. Here's the gambler's fallacy. Like, I'm thinking that I could never have as bad of a beat as that ever again. So I know that next week is going to be better.
I didn't see Scott Van Pelt that night. Is that like the worst beat you've ever seen?
Oh, it has to be.
No.
No. Oh my God, it has to be. Are you kidding me?
You didn't have a prayer in that game to begin with. You had to rely on this miracle play to even get a shot at it.
But think about that's not a bad. Hold beat. On. No. Oh my. But think but about
I'm
just this.
Saying, no, the it, bad it, beat it, comes. Yeah, it comes on the idea of whether or not you kick the extra point at the end.
I understand that, but
on
like,
a technicality.
But to me, a bad beat is like, I have it, I'm in, I got the money, and then it's immediately taken away from you. In this case, you didn't have it. You were lucky to even have a shot at it with an extra point.
Yeah, but if you're thinking this way, though, like, you have people on each side thinking that they're going to win. Like, and it gets taken from them in a matter of gathering all these players out of the locker room to get back on the field, and then just to take a knee. If you're the people who took Minnesota minus 5.5, you are celebrating like no other person has ever seen you celebrate.
No, you're not. Cause you didn't, that extra point would have given you minus 5.5. It's just minus. It was a 5-point margin.
Well, I know the extra point would have gave you 6 and you would have won.
That's what I mean. Like, you got hosed.
Right, but I'm saying, I mean, the Diggs touchdown, they score, and you're thinking, well, they have to kick the extra point. That's just how it happens. So all of a sudden, you're elated, and then they come back out on the field, and then New Orleans, the people who took New Orleans and the points are having a day of their life. Like, I mean, the swing of emotions is in that. Man, I need to gamble right now.
Oh, no.
I'm getting on both.
Well, guess what? We're going to be making some picks later on the show for the championship weekend, but that's just one game. I want to talk some more about what else we saw on the divisional weekend. We're only going to have time for a little bit of time here. Can we just forget about New England, Tennessee? It was a dumb game.
Yeah, that's fine.
Do you want to do?
Except they fired their coach, and that's hilarious.
Yeah, they fired their coach after giving a new extension, as per Ian Rappaport, I guess, maybe. I don't know. Let's talk about the other NFC matchup, and then I guess next segment we'll get into the AFC. Atlanta, Philadelphia, what did you guys take away from that?
I would like to pose a question to kind of give my assessment of that game. Like, when is Jim Schwartz going to become a head coach?
He was a Detroit Lions head coach, so the answer is never.
That's not true.
No, anyone who has not been an interim, anyone who's been more than interim Lions head coach has not gotten a head coaching gig after that.
I was going to say, you better give respect to Dick Geron where it's deserved.
Yeah,
okay?
Dick Geron was an interim, though. That's what I'm saying.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. I'm glad you added that caveat, Chris. That was very non-adequate of you.
I've done my homework. I know about the Lions head coach curse.
I mean, I just think that was like a masterful
defensive performance. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that. I mean, the only way that Philly wins and advances is if they shut down the Falcons' offense like they did. And man, it was incredible.
I got see. Maybe this is my Vikings fandom leaking out, but I'm not that impressed with the Eagles. I don't want to count them out of this game because with the defense this good, you can't. But we've seen this year specifically the Falcons' offense kind of struggle at plenty of times, right? It doesn't look anything. This whole year really didn't look anything like it did last year.
I mean, you're relying on Nick Foles and Jay Ajayi to get this stuff done. So that's kind of it's a rough beat there.
Yeah. And I don't know. I think they're going to have a shot, and I think their defense is impressive. And if you want to talk about Jim Schwartz, maybe he deserves a head coaching job, but think back to that article that Andrew Cotto wrote about what you want in a coach and how it's a little bit more about your personality and your ability to connect with your players than it is your scheme.
I'm wondering if there's a whole lot of a difference between a temperament of a guy like Sean Payton and the temperament of a guy like a Jim Schwartz.
I think a lot of it just has to do with kind of, yeah, the personnel you have around there too. What I will also say is that I will never scrub from my memory the fact that Jim Schwartz on the Thanksgiving Day game against the Houston Texans throws a flag he absolutely does not need to and just melts his entire team down in the process. That's going to stay with me no matter how many years we go.
Oh, I mean, about
Jim Schwartz.
Jesus Christ, the end of that 2013 season was an absolute disaster.
Holy God. Didn't they start like 3-1? They started 3-1 that year, I think.
They were something like, I want to say 6-3. And the division.
They didn't even get that high. They didn't, because that was.
I think they did.
I thought that was like a 4-12 year.
No. The division was won at 8-7-1. And I think the Lions finished 7-9. Maybe 6-10. Let me see.
Well, this
they finished 7-9. Yeah, they finished 7-9, and yeah, they were 6-3, and they lost.
So the record was worse than I thought. I mean,
they lost
six
of their last seven.
Yeah, that's what I was looking for. Though that six of the last seven was just yeah. Anyway, let's take a break there. When we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit. We've got one more game to talk from the playoffs here with Steelers, Jaguars, and I think we'll make some picks for the upcoming weekend, and let's even talk a little bit of Lions when we get the chance.
Off-season talk.
Off-season, baby. It's good again. Oh, spreadsheet howl. We'll be right back. POD cast, we're ready here. We're charging down the secret tunnel. Chris Paul's leading the way.
Foreshadowing.
I'm sorry, that almost eclipsed like this entire NFL weekend for me, hearing all of the juicy details about the Houston Rockets and the Los Angeles Clippers and their near scuff. And they're like yelling. It wasn't even a fight. It was just like a yelling match, but they managed to break into the Clippers locker room. And by the details, apparently it's because they found like Chris Paul knew of a connecting like entrance between locker rooms or something.
We'll get into it. We got a question lingering.
We got that in the mailbag.
In the mailbag.
Yeah. I'm going to lose my mind.
You were so eager to talk about this.
I love it. I love it. And I also love the amount of trash that the Jacksonville Jaguars talked after beating the Steelers. Honest to God, I loved that. And I loved it because you had Tom Coughlin out there. Mike Tomlin out there. God, I'm getting mixed up all the time. And players talking about how it's going to come down to their team and the New England Patriots. And even today, after everything's been said and done, I still don't think anyone's giving Jacksonville the credit it deserves. You can't even talk about how good their defense is because the argument immediately comes back. Well, they also gave up 42 points. I don't care. Like the Jaguars deserve a little bit of credit here and they're still not getting it. So you know what? They can talk all the shit they want.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think they can talk all the shit they want. I feel like I didn't give them enough credit. I thought they certainly had a fighting chance in this game, but I did not expect them to go up 28-7 to start.
I'm gonna be honest, two emotions were going through my head. First off, when Leonard Fournette left, I thought, oh God, this isn't going to be good for them.
Yeah. I even threw it out there. I'm like, oh, this is Travis Kelce. This is the exact same thing.
Yeah, this is you found the Achilles heel. You just took away their biggest asset, because Leonard Fournette was a bowling ball. No one on those Steelers could touch him, and he was just ripping things apart. But then I got a comment on Twitter from someone who has the screen name Lions in 18, who told me, like, I was trashing the Steelers, because I think I pointed this out, and we'll talk about this a little later. Like, I think the Steelers just choke in the playoffs. And I was like, look, all the Steelers have done the past 3 years is choke in the playoffs, so I don't want to hear all this. No one could have seen this happen. And he responded, this tweet will not age well, as the Steelers were starting to come back. And I'm just was like, nope, I'm holding my ground now.
I mean, I'm not sure if everybody just completely forgot about the game that they played earlier in the season where Roethlisberger got picked five times, but I mean, here's the thing at the end of the day, though. Like, I just don't understand how a team with Blake Bortles as their quarterback, I don't care who your defense is, I don't understand how they keep winning football games. I mean, admittedly, like, Bortles played a better game than he did against Buffalo, but to say that, it's like, okay, I mean, you, like, you managed to get in the shower without drowning.
I mean, again, it comes back to Leonard Fournette. I know he was only averaging like 4.4 yards a carry, but like with the production he put in that game, it was enough. It was enough to pull him through.
Three touchdowns, and I mean, they had four rushing touchdowns in that game. And yeah, Ryan, you're right. Like, I feel like both with Bortles and with Nick Foles, there was kind of a false narrative going around that they, you know, they remained poised. They, you know, put up a playoff performance in a time of need. Blake Bortles was 14 of 26. He was barely above 50%, and he only threw the ball 26 times. Nick Foles, I don't know if that dude ever threw the ball downfield. And Blake Bortles also, every time he threw it downfield, it was a duck, except for one. I think the game-winning score, he had a deep pass, down to the 5-yard line. Right. These quarterbacks, they're going to be trouble.
Yeah, we'll get into like predictions for the championship round, but the thing about Bortles is that like once they got up by so much, like the only thing that the Steelers were letting them do, and the only thing that the Jags wanted to do if they were throwing the ball was like, oh, like screen passes and like really short yardage stuff, like dink and dunk stuff, and obviously that's how you should play it. But then again, I don't. If I'm the Jags offensive coordinator, I'm giving the ball to Fournette like 45 times.
Yeah, can I give you guys a hot take I have in mind that kind of connects this game back to the Detroit Lions coaching situation?
I can't wait.
So today, there's a lot of talk out here about Mike Tomlin, about how much blame he deserves for all of this. And there's a lot of people, rightly so, rushing to Tomlin's defense when it comes to what kind of a coach he is, because the arguments against him is like he didn't have his team prepared. He's been, you know, this team doesn't really go anywhere in the playoffs. Take your pick what it is. And again, as I said, there's a lot of people defending keeping Tomlin. But I'm just going to say this. If you're a Lions fan and you were calling for Jim Caldwell's head, you can't be out here defending Mike Tomlin. Because it's the same kind of thing we're talking about here. Because the Steelers want to do better than just keep losing in the playoffs in like the first round, in like the second round or the conference championship of the playoffs. Likewise, Lions fans didn't want to just keep competing for near wild card. I know they're different levels, but I'm saying like y'all were saying Jim Caldwell, we're plateauing with him. We can do better. That's what the anti-Tomlin people are saying. So you've got to come up with a different argument. That's all I'm saying.
I don't know. That's a hard one to sell me on because the guy has
won. I'm just saying, don't
10 plus games in four straight years.
Sure, okay. And Jim Caldwell is the first Lions coach to have a winning record in when?
You can't compare Jim Caldwell to the Lions and then not compare him to Mike Tomlin.
Why not?
Because, I mean, we're talking about we're not talking about the Lions past. We're talking about where they want to be in the future. And Jim Caldwell didn't win a playoff game. Mike Tomlin has won 3 in the past 3 years.
Okay, but Steelers would say that we don't care about playoff wins. We care about going to the Super Bowl.
Right, but I totally get that, but the Lions have not come close. If you're getting to an AFC championship game, you've done just about all you can as a coach. Sometimes it's just about luck. Sometimes it's just about personnel. But if you're getting that far in the playoffs, that means your team is competitive enough and good enough to win. You can't say that about any of the Lions teams under Jim Caldwell.
Actually, how many times they've actually gone? The last 3 years, they've only gotten like one AFC playoff, though. I mean, AFC championship.
That's still one more than the Lions have.
They missed the playoffs a few years before that.
5 years ago.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, that's the whole window we're saying here. So in the past 5 years, you missed the playoffs, 4 years, not going to the AFC championship. And then the 1 year you made the AFC championship, you lose it.
I mean, you made the playoffs 8 out of 11 years. I don't know what you want
okay,
to
say. Okay, but like, again, like, much like you're saying, not use the history there. Now you're saying, like, you're trying to use the Lions bar to define the Steelers.
No, I'm trying to say that team has been competitive for, I mean, they haven't even had a losing record under Tomlin once.
Okay.
They're constantly competitive. They're constantly in that conversation where the Lions were kind of up and down.
No, I mean, like, look, I think Tomlin's a good coach. And I want him to stay. I'm just saying, like, if you were out here calling for Caldwell's head, it's kind of hard to then translate that to then say, if you're calling for his head on the basis that it looks like this team has gone as far as it can with Jim Caldwell, I'm just saying those opponents against Tomlin are going to say this team has gone as far as it can with Mike Tomlin. This is the same argument there that they're going to be using.
I see what you're saying, Chris, but at the same time, Steelers fans have seen how far Tomlin can take them, and that's a Super Bowl championship.
Yeah, but you haven't gotten back there in how long now?
I know, but I mean, I feel like you build in a lot of cachet when you do something like that.
And I think you especially do.
And especially with a franchise like the Steelers, who, I mean, how many head coaches have they had? I think the fewest of any NFL franchise.
I believe that's right. I'm trying to find the history of how many coaches there has been. But if I remember, it's a pretty short one.
Let me throw this question out.
16 coaches. That 16 coaches, including the 5 they had back when they were the Pittsburgh Pirates.
If the Steelers were to fire Mike Tomlin tonight, do you want the Lions to hire him tomorrow?
Well, I thought we're getting Patricia.
Answer the question.
No, Patricia's a 100% done deal. So says Jeremy Reisman.
You guys are really fun.
All right, let's do the picks.
Go ahead. But to answer that, no. I wouldn't want the Lions to hire Mike Tomlin.
Are you serious? He's a top 5 coach in the league. Maybe top 2.
Did you see the start of that game, though? I'm not trying to deny that. I totally think that's true. But I want Bob Quinn to hire his guy. I don't want him to go get Mike Tomlin just because he's a top 5 coach with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Okay.
Is that going to necessarily transfer over to be a top 5 coach with the Detroit Lions? I don't know. I'm not saying he's not a great coach. I'm just saying I would rather have the guy that the Lions clearly want and were willing to, like, you know, swing and miss on everybody. And miss out on, you know, any other possible head coach that they could have gotten and be stuck with, I don't know. What if they ended up getting stuck with, you know, some other coach? So I'm 100% sold on Patricia. Don't try to take this away from me by giving some hypothetical Mike Tomlin situation.
What if you were the GM?
I would have hired you as head coach.
Aw.
I would have hired Andrew Cotto. That's a lie. I would hire Bob Stead. Anyway, let's take picks for the for the conference championships. As you know, we did not talk at all about New England, Tennessee, and I think that's the right call. There was absolutely no reason to talk about that awful, disgusting game. Let me find the lines here real quick. Just quick thoughts of what you've got either on AFC or NFC. What's your thoughts right now?
I put this out on Twitter this week. I'm much more confident in the Vikings beating the Eagles than I am the Patriots defeating the Jaguars.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, first of all, I think this Patriots team isn't quite as invincible as the Patriot teams of past. They're just kind of okay at everything. I mean, they're still obviously really good at throwing the ball because the obvious Tom Brady, whatever. But as we've seen, the defense has been okay. It's obviously a lot better than it was in the first four games, but it's still playing at an average level. And they don't
level.
An adequate level. They don't run the ball all that well either. So I just think if there's a team that you could develop that would challenge this Patriots team, it would look a lot like the Jaguars. Someone who can get pressure on Tom Brady without sending blitzes. Someone who can stop the run with ease. And then someone who can kind of control the clock on offense, run the ball a ton, run a lot of play action. The one thing that the Patriots have, and it's probably why I'm still going to take them in this game, is coaching, is that they're just such a superbly coached team that it doesn't seem to matter what the teams look like on paper.
Can they're I just, so good. Yeah, I want to give two things here and they kind of tie in together. You mentioned there about, you know, the Patriots can pass. Let's talk about Jacksonville by way of Football Outsiders, who during the year was the number one pass defense in DVOA, -27.5%. Number two, Baltimore, -15.3%. So more than 12 percentile difference in how much better Jacksonville is than Baltimore when it comes to their passing defense.
Huge.
Yeah, like, and you can't tell me that Tom Brady's going to be immune to that. You also want to know what's going to be riding you on that disrespect train that the Jacksonville seems to be riding. You want to know what Vegas is scoring this as? New England -9.
It's crazy.
-9 in a conference championship.
I also think the over-under is far too high.
Yeah, 40. It's VI consensus 46.5.
I'm taking the under. I don't think that there's going to be much scoring in that game at all.
I mean, but still, as Jeremy was kind of illustrating there, can you take Jacksonville in Boston, up there in Foxborough? Can you do that? Will you do that?
I don't know. It's a wild proposition, but I mean, it's also one that I don't know. I'm never, you know, let me CC John Boys right now. I'm never counting out Touchdown Tom.
I will say for fan forecast this game, it's going to be a hell of a week waiting for these two to play, because up until then we have the North Florida sports fan facing off against the Boston sports fan. And if you don't think the North Florida sports fan can't measure up, buddy, let me remind you that all these people are fans of either Florida or Florida State football.
Yep. I don't know, man. What really scares me about this conference championship weekend is that there's a potential we have Philly fans versus Boston fans in the Super Bowl.
Whew.
Oh, Lord.
I'm putting the North Florida fans right up there with them, though. Like, it's hard to remember that time, but just remember every time Florida State is in the national title picture in college. Remember what those Seminole fans do, man. Talking about the Noles.
I don't know. If it's Boston fans and Philly fans all at US Bank Stadium, I want them to push that ship of a stadium into one of the 10,000 lakes in Minnesota and let it sink.
That's not going to be big enough. We're going to have to bring this thing all the way out to what is it? It's not actually. Yeah. Lake Michigan. Just punch it into Lake Michigan. Let's do it.
So the obvious answer for the worst possible Super Bowl would be Jacksonville, Philly, right?
No,
it's
Philly.
I do not need to even remember a time when Blake Bortles and Nick Foles are going to square off.
Like, people are already pushing the idea that everyone's already saying Blake Bortles has more playoff wins than Matt Stafford. Now imagine if you add like the possibility of a Super Bowl ring.
Whatever. I don't care. I don't care what people say.
I'm just saying.
It only makes them look stupid. I don't care.
Okay, here we go. Minnesota's actually a road favorite. Philadelphia's a home dog. Philadelphia Yeah, plus +3 at home. And I've got to say, as much as Minnesota is now playing for the miracles, it's hard to bet against Philly right now.
I'm wavering on this one a little bit more than I am the New England line, but I think I'm taking Philly in the juice. I don't know. I just think their defense is going to be. I don't know how Minnesota is going to handle Philadelphia's defense.
I don't know how Minnesota's going to handle a missed Forbath field goal to win the game.
But I mean, take that same line of logic and flip it on Philly's side. Like, how is Philly going to score against this Minnesota defense? Minnesota at least has a good offense. Does Philly have a good offense with Nick Foles? I don't think the answer is yes.
Let me flip this back. Minnesota is going outside, and I know it's a team from Minnesota, but they're going outdoors to play in Philly. So, I mean, I don't think you can underestimate how much of a factor the crowd was in that game last week with Minnesota and New Orleans. It was clearly affecting like the Saints in the first half. That was probably the worst first half of football Drew Brees may have ever played in his entire life playing football. And I think that it had a direct correlation also to, you know, Minnesota and the environment that was in there. That place was going insane. So I don't know. I think that on the road, I see the over under is at 38. I mean, that's
38 and a half.
Very low.
It's very low. And I mean, it's tough to say that it's going to be any higher than that. I mean, I would say that the team that scores 17 points first probably wins this game.
I can agree with that. And I really don't see how the Eagles get there. It's going to have to be through turnovers. And the Vikings team doesn't turn the ball over all that much. Look, they've got a really good offense. They're number 5 in offensive DVOA.
I said it the year when Carson Palmer won the MVP. Guys like Case Keenum, that clock always strikes midnight and that carriage always turns back into a pumpkin.
Well, Nick Foles. Well, Nick Foles has been playing like a pumpkin anyways.
I'm just saying, Case Keenum's the one with the glass slippers right now.
We 100% need Jeff Fisher at this game though, right? Like, he needs to be there.
He should be on the Fox pregame show.
He should flip the coin. He'd probably fuck that up somehow though.
he'd probably like go to flip the coin. All right, gentlemen. None of that 9-7 bullshit tonight.
I just want you to know that none of you guys would be here if it wasn't for me.
If it wasn't for me.
I made you.
He would say something stupid like, you know, like coal under pressure makes diamonds or something. He'd be like, you'll never would have got there without the adversity I put you through.
That's what I'm saying. I want him to just be one of those guys in the pregame show, just to watch him smolder there. And not only to smolder, but also while he's smoldering, just, you know, like, why am I blanking on every Fox Sports, on every Fox pregame show guy's name? Just all those old Bradshaw. Coaches, like Bradshaw, like giving him addled questions. And he's just like, why the fuck do I have to put up with this?
Do you think this game is going to be any fun to call? Like, what do you think? What do you think Joe Buck and Troy Aikman are going to talk about the entire game?
They're going to talk about that miracle. Joe Buck's going to undo all the goodwill he got for not screwing up that Minneapolis miracle call, because that was actually a good call by him.
It was.
Like, usually in those moments, Joe Buck, like, his acumen is to just not have any emotion at all. And he called that thing perfectly. And he is going to absolutely take back all of that goodwill in this game.
Because doesn't it seem like the one thing that they usually talk about during almost every Fox broadcast with those two guys is like, it's always like about quarterback play. And I know it kind of lends itself having Aikman on there, but I feel like they over fetishize that stuff. So they're not going to have the chance to do that in this game.
Well, I think all of football media does though. Like, they're just a product of that, but yeah. But yeah, it's going to be hell to listen to Aikman and Buck talk about Keenum and Foles for 60 minutes.
I'm telling you, I would switch the lines on this game. I think Minnesota could blow out the Eagles on Sunday. I'm just going to say it right now.
Wait, switch the line? Like, wait, so you're saying, like, the Eagles at +9?
Yes.
They are, I mean, oh, really?
Wow. Yes, I would switch the lines from the AFC and the NFC championship game. And I think that's might be more reminiscent of what we're going to see.
So would you give Jacksonville the -3 or New England?
No, I'm still taking New England, but I think I think it's going to be a very close game.
All right, let's take a break here. I think it covers all the playoffs. I know there's not a lot of Lions talk, but you know what? There's not a lot happening this week. We finish up last week's podcast immediately as rumors were coming out that Patricia might be going to New York, and we were like sweating bullets, and we just kind of vowed just like, reel it back in on the coach talk because we honestly have no clue what's going to happen.
Oh,
we know it's an exact lock.
It is a 100% lock.
We're taking a break. We'll be right back. POD guest. We're going to talk some Lions finally. I think maybe we have a kind of interesting idea. We didn't want to talk coaching rumors. We didn't want to talk run game. What we're going to do instead is we're going to present 3-point plans. Now, I don't like theoreticals. I don't like being the armchair GM, but Jeremy, Ryan, they do. And they want to talk about how they think they can fix up the Lions. Well, whoever comes in, be it Matt Patricia or apparently Tom Call. Why do I keep doing that? Mike Tomlin. I keep ruining it by making Mike Tomlin and Tom Coughlin two very different people. Or you anyone got Jack else.
Feel fever.
Catch it. Catch the fever. Any one of those guys, whatever it is, we're putting Jeremy and Ryan in those seats, the seats every fan wants to be in.
And do you want to be? What? Do you want to be the judge at the end? Pick whichever 3-point plan you like the best.
Well, see, if I became the judge, the problem is one of you guys is just going to immediately change one of your points to include something like, you know, run a single wing pistol and never punt on fourth down. I will immediately say you're the winner.
Fair.
But you know what? I'll take winners anyway. I'll just try not to be biased. So, okay. Impartial judge time. Pounding the table, pounding the gavel. Let's bring this court to order. Ryan, why don't we start with you? What's your first point?
Oh man, I'm woefully unprepared. Yep, I feel like this is my. I know you did. This is great. This is great radio. All right. So the first thing that the Lions need to do this offseason is, and I know this may be an unpopular opinion. I've gathered this much from the article that I had go out today about how I would rank the Lions free agents, but I think that the Lions need to franchise tag Ezekiel Ansah. I know it's going to carry with it kind of a hefty price tag, but the Lions do have a considerable amount of cap room. You know, they're estimated to have close to $50 million in cap, and that's without any other kind of roster movement. And I know that tagging Ansah would cost roughly in the neighborhood of like $17 million. And I know that eats into a large chunk of it, but to be honest, the defensive end market, very thin. And I think that there's a lot of teams like people who want to, you know, say, oh, plug in DeMarcus Lawrence. It's like, why would the Cowboys ever let him go? I mean, why wouldn't they want to franchise tag him? He's younger than Ansah. He has, you know, all these other things going for him. So if the Lions don't get Ansah back, I can almost say with certainty that the Lions will be a worse team next year than they would be without him.
Spicy.
That's a tough take to digest because Ansah wasn't himself for 12 games this season.
Well, you know what? It's his plan. That's his plan sticking forward. Well, Jeremy, why don't you give your first point?
Did you want to say something quick, Ryan?
Yeah, I just want to say real quick, like, I mean, I think the only way that Ansah can go is up. Like, I don't see, like, I mean, I just don't see him being injury plagued for another season. And I know it's kind of hard to make that point when he has had so many injuries over the past two seasons, but I just can't see it being another season because of what Tara Lawson kind of said on his way out the door about his health and about how it can improve. So,
yeah, I mean, my counterpoint would just be we were saying this exact same thing last offseason.
Yeah, I know.
All right, Jim, all right. First point.
My number one is hire a decent offensive line coach. I think that is the most important thing to do right off the bat. I think it should be Matt Patricia's first order of duty, even though we don't currently have a defensive coordinator. Get that offensive line coach in place, because I'm buying into the idea that the running game woes were almost 100% on the offensive line coach and Jim Caldwell. As Jeff Schwartz, the former Lions offensive lineman, former Giants offensive lineman, said, it's basically on the offensive line coach to create the running game, to develop it, to scheme it.
Hold
Ron
on,
Prince,
hold on.
Get the thank hell out of here.
Thank you. Okay, I was about to say, do you know his name?
Yes.
Well, you just said the offensive line coach under Jim Caldwell.
I didn't want to say it because I'm afraid if I say it three times, he's going to show up.
I mean, that was a real possibility in college.
So I think that's of the highest importance right now, because I think we can all agree that the running game held this team back last year. And I'm of the belief that they have enough talent. They probably need to add a couple guys in the backfield, but I feel like they have enough talent where they could be an average running game with the guys they have in place, even the guys they have in place on the offensive line. I think the talent is there. The scheme is not. So offensive line coach, priority number one.
Not to derail this much further, but did you ever notice that about Jim Caldwell, is that he had this uncanny talent to gather like failed college coaches and put them in positions on his team? Like, we had Ron Prince in the offensive line. Randy Edsall was here for a hot minute before he got snapped up, but he was going to be like, they just randomly gave him like, you know, a special projects role or something.
Yeah.
And you have Al Golden coaching tight ends.
You should love Jim Caldwell with all this college talk.
These are all the, these are the misfit toys. What are you talking about? All right. Well, Jeremy, coming at you with a scathing hot take that we need a decent offensive line coach. Point number two, let's hear it from Ryan.
Can I just take Jeremy's point and have it be part of my second point?
Sure.
So yeah, I can different. Because yeah, I mean, these are our rules and I can make them up as I go along. So obviously exactly. the Lions need to address, you know, getting an offensive line coach for all the reasons that Jeremy already laid out. But the other thing, and I'm going to snatch this from Jeremy, is that the Lions do not need to spend a draft pick on a running back until the third round or in free agency. Like, I don't see why they need to go out and get a Carlos Hyde. I don't see why they need to go out and get, I don't know, a Jerick McKinnon, or obviously the most popular name, Le'Veon Bell. I just don't see the reason why. I think the Lions need to steer clear of all that. Also, if you take into account my first part of my plan where I said they needed to franchise tag Ziggy Ansah, or I'm not a huge proponent of giving him like a long-term deal. A lot of people are like, well, give him a 3-year deal. You can't. But I think that the Lions need to take this kind of I'm going to get killed for this. But kind of take this not necessarily a wait and see approach, but like they don't need to take, you know, a Bryce Love or something like that in the first round. Like, they can wait until the second, or, you know, they can wait till the third round, I think, to get a running back, because there are so many other needs. Like, they only have 5 picks right now as it stands, and the Lions need so much help on the defensive side of the ball when it comes to the defensive line. Maybe even another linebacker if they don't bring back Tyre Whitehead. So I think that those take precedent over getting a running back if you think about Jeremy's first part of his plan, which was to get an offensive line coach. Because, Jeremy, you can take over your next point here, but I think that just from the offensive line going from – or from the running game going from like a 30th ranked rushing game to a like 20th ranked rushing game, where it needs to be like maybe even a little bit below league average, would turn this offense into, you know, one of the better offenses in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, we saw how good they were at play action this year without a running game. Imagine what they could be like if linebackers were actually biting, like if they were actually committing some linebackers in the box because the Lions could run the ball. And I just wanted to do a quick note because we probably have some listeners screaming at the at their podcasts right now. Bryce Love is returning to college for one more year. FYI.
Is he really?
He is, yeah.
Cool, good. Lions can't take him. Taking bullets out of their, it's taking bullets out of their gun.
All right, my number two plan kind of is along the lines of what you were saying in that don't take a running back early is draft a defensive lineman with both of your first two picks. I don't need to go into how bad this Lions defensive line was this year, both in stopping the run and in especially rushing the passer. I'd prefer two guys who can rush the passer because I think that's the quickest way that you can turn around a defense in general is just get to the quarterback. And we've seen a lot of young rookies able to do that in their rookie year. With pick number 20, it's not going to be as easy. You're not going to get a Joey Bosa, but there's talent there. And I think the Lions, I don't like locking yourself into a position in the draft, but I think the Lions are in a situation very similar to where they were last year, where they absolutely had to take a linebacker early. They absolutely have to take a defensive lineman early. And I think they have to do it with their first two picks.
Okay. I like that. Like that. All right. Point three, Ryan, give us your final points, your plan.
The Lions need to get Brad Kaya back. I'm sick of this guy. Here's what they need to do. If they trade Stafford, the Browns have a pick at number one and number four. If that happens, they can get Saquon Barkley. They can address the running game. They can even get a Josh Allen to come in here and to compete with Brad Kaya. They trade Jake Rudock. They can also get some later picks in the draft. They can really build the best rookie team of any team ever. You saw how the New Orleans Saints were able to succeed by having the best tackle in the draft, by having the best cornerback in the draft, by having the best halfback in the draft. I mean, Marshawn Lattimore, Ryan Ramczyk. I mean, the list goes on. Alvin Kamara, Marcus Williams, even before, he went T-Rex arm. The Lions can put together the best team possible.
You're the worst.
By trading Ryan, Matthew Stafford.
Jeremy, don't poo-poo him because that kind of spiciness is what I like to see in a three-point plan. So.
Yeah,
because
you're Rob Parker's best friend now, you son of a bitch. How many of the Browns draft picks would you have to take to send Matthew Stafford their way? They have the first, the fourth, the 33rd, the 35th, another second round, the 63rd.
Will they even be able to take his salary coming up? Because he's on one of those like increasing scales. But hey, yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't know because they're still paying Brock Osweiler's contract.
Jeez, that's right. All right, Jeremy, your third point.
My third point's kind of a weird one because they're not. This isn't, I guess, a drastic area of need, but I think they're going to need the depth at some point, and I think they need to add another linebacker. And this is not knowing exactly what they're going to do with Tahir Whitehead. I don't think Jalen Reeves-Maybin is at a point where he can become a starter week one next year. So I'd like to see them go out and get a veteran linebacker in free agency, and one hopefully above the level of Paul Warlow, because I don't want to see Paul Warlow in the game ever again. And I'm assuming that they're not going to be bringing him back. So, I mean, if you want to talk another weakness of this defense this year, it was their ability to cover it, tight ends and running backs. And hopefully Jared Davis improves in that. I expect him to kind of return to a full role, not taking off in third downs, obvious passing downs next year. I feel like he's going to be that every down linebacker, but I just don't know what the plan is behind them. And so I need a veteran linebacker out there, hopefully one that can be decent in coverage. And I don't have a name out there for you. I don't have the list of available linebackers in free agency, but if not in the draft, I feel like they should get at least a veteran guy, a guy who's been around long enough.
One name that I can throw out there is And I mean, I have zero idea whether or not Philly would be super willing to not re-sign him or anything, but Nigel Bradham, he's going to be a free agent. I don't know how much he's going to cost, but while the Lions do have a ton of money, and I did put the idea out there about, you know, franchise tagging Ziggy, that would like effectively cut into like 40% of their cap, of the available space that they have. So, I mean, like making a move like that would really like limit the quality of guy you could get. So I don't think you could get like a Bradham, especially with the Lions. I mean, I think that we both have these three part plans, Jeremy, but we can both agree that there's an awful lot of things that the Lions need to take care of this offseason.
Most on defense.
An awful lot of things they need to shore up. I agree with you about the linebacker point. But do you agree with me about getting Brad Kaya back?
I don't, unfortunately. I wish I could say, because I want this to be a harmonious podcast. But,
hold up. No, we can't have harmonious podcasts.
Well, I mean, just between me and Ryan are usually pretty harmonious.
I know, and I'm trying to make this better.
You're trying to Rob Parker this.
What about Paul Posluszny? He's 33, so that's admittedly a bit of a red flag, but you know, he's part of this awesome Jacksonville defense right now and playing pretty well.
Yeah, I think also too that the spiciest thing that you're going to find this entire offseason, should Matt Patricia become the Lions head coach, is they're going to talk about the defense that he's going to bring here, and everybody's going to want to talk about the 3-4 thing. But like, even beyond that stuff, like the Patriots do have that like rush linebacker role that kind of like, you know, Kyle Van Noy kind of fills a little bit for them. So, mm-hmm. I mean, like, I wonder if they're going to maybe target a guy who could fit that role specifically, like in free agency. Because I don't, with the Lions having 5 draft picks, I almost agree with you. Like, the first 2 picks need to probably be along the defensive line. But I don't think that they can spend one of those 3 remaining draft picks that they have on a quote unquote specialist guy that would be like a, you know, like a rush linebacker. Like, I think that there's a lot of other things they need to shore up. And we didn't even talk about the offensive line. They might need a new guard.
It's true. We don't know what happened with Travis Swanson. The one thing I want to also bring up before we bring the segment to a close, because I know we're probably running up on time here, is that with guys like Tahir Whitehead and Ezekiel Ansah, I wonder, and I hate to, you know, Patriot weigh it up, but they're very much a next guy up type thing. They don't give a lot of second contracts to players. And I'm just wondering if that's going to play into Bob Quinn's plans with Ezekiel Ansah or Tahir Whitehead. It's worth noting that Bob Quinn was the one who re-signed Tahir Whitehead 2 years ago to a 2-year deal. I think it might be time for him to move on from both. I really wouldn't be surprised.
All right. With that in mind, we're going to move on to the mailbag. It's been too long. We got your questions lined up. And we're going to try to make this mailbag work for us. Hopefully it's going to be good for you, too. Stick around. Right. We'll be right back.
Chris, who won?
Oh, really? Okay. You really need to know? No, you won, Ryan.
Oh, yes.
Of course.
You have the spicy takes.
Just how I like my wings.
I was hoping to lose anyways.
Well, you would. You're a loser.
It just validates my opinion even more, the fact that you don't agree with it.
Mail time, hashtag AskPOD. Send them in at any point during the week. The spicier, the better, as we like to say here. We start with reviews. Jeremy, do we have anything?
We do have a review this week. It's not a 5-star review, but it's a 4-star review.
No, I'm not interested.
No, we're doing it. It's from Word Chemistry. He calls it an adequate podcast.
I guess 4 is adequate.
This is a 5-star pod when they go in depth with analysis and stay on topic. which happens more often than not when they have a guest representing the opposing team. Otherwise, it's more like 3 stars because they get too far off topic, which would be fine if it were short segments, but they end up quite extended periods of time. Sorry, guys, I like you, but I have to be honest. Also, I'm a huge fan of the F word, but the host overuses it in a slightly tactless manner. I apologize for being so negative because I do thoroughly enjoy the podcast for the most part. But these two things bother me occasionally when listening. Have more podcasts modeled similar to your game preview pods and keep up the good work.
A, fuck you. There, we'll just get that out of the way. B, man, I don't know what else to say. Like, this is a pretty long pod as it is. If you're here listening for an hour, you're committed for an hour. I keep getting these guys to shorten it up, but they won't. That's all.
What are you gonna do? That's it.
Okay.
I will agree with Chris. That is our fault. Not Chris's fault. My fault.
Everyone's fault. It takes a village. It takes a village to make a podcast.
To raise a podcast.
Nothing could be further from the truth. Everyone has a podcast.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah, but it takes a village to raise a podcast. That needs to go in the description somewhere.
Okay, let's get to the questions. Normally, I completely ignore these accounts altogether because there's a billion kind of parody accounts on the internet. Absolutely every last one of them is bad, except for the Jeff Jarvis parody account. But that's kind of a tech figure, and not a lot of people are going to get that. But I'm taking this question as a roundabout way to get to a question I actually want to answer. So we start with unemployed Jim Caldwell at Fake Caldwell. Can I have a job? Which is leading me to my question. Do you think Jim Caldwell will get another job in the NFL? Like, doesn't need to be a head coach gig. Is he going to get another coordinator job? Is he going to get a position coach job? What do you see?
This year or ever?
Let's go with ever. Let's go with ever. Cause he's not a spry chicken anymore.
I think he does. Yeah. If he wants to, I think he'll have one. The question is whether he wants to or not, because you're right, he's not a spry chicken. You know, we saw him. I mean, family clearly means a lot to this guy, so it wouldn't surprise me if he's just kind of sick of it at this point. But I think he's still valued around the NFL, and I think he'll eventually find a job
as a coordinator or as a
coordinator, either coordinator or like a quarterback's coach.
Would that have changed if I said this upcoming season?
Yeah, I don't think it's gonna happen this year.
Okay. What about you, Ryan? What do you think?
You had to add that little caveat of in the NFL.
Do you think he's gonna get a job in college?
No, I think he's going to take over for Papa John.
Oh man. That's good. I like that.
That's disrespectful. You can't call him Papa.
Well, let's do another. Let's do another coach question. Brett Cougnot, why wouldn't they look at Del Rio or Fisher?
Oh man, Cougnot drank the rest of those NFL beers that he's been having all season before he typed up that question. I do find it interesting though that Del Rio hasn't gotten really any buzz from anybody else.
Yeah, that's like, it's really weird. Like, I mean, he made a successful Raiders season. Like, that's kind of hard to do.
Hold on though. I mean, if we're gonna give Del Rio credit though, I mean, like, he was a guy who last season he was like what a lot of people want in their head coaches though. I mean, the guy was super aggressive. There was that game where he went for two to score a touch or to win the game at the end of the game. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, if you want to call that stuff crazy, you can, but like at the same time, I mean, he's willing to go out there and try to win football games. I mean, this season, not so much. It was tough, but I don't know. I just find it weird that like his name hasn't really been floated around at all.
Okay, Jeremy's out here with the slander saying only one good season. Jeremy, may I remind you, A, it's in Oakland, so B, how many other successful seasons has Oakland had in like the 21st century?
Valid point.
I guess it is, but look, what has Jack Del Rio done to earn a job? I mean,
he's had a successful season with the Oakland Raiders.
One winning season since 2008.
Yeah, that's impossible to say for anyone else.
Man, look, I'm about to get off the pod. I can't handle this. I can't handle this man who's trying to slander the 2005 Jacksonville Jaguars when they went 12-4, and you know who was playing quarterback for him.
I don't actually. Who was playing quarterback for them?
David Garrard has to
it
be.
It wasn't. It was actually Byron Leftwich.
Oh. yeah, sure. If you want to keep giving a guy credit for something that happened in 2005, why don't you just freaking hire John Gruden?
Well, guess what the Raiders did.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Hey, look. Okay. 2007, he went 11-5 with David Garrard at the helm. Okay.
Say that again.
I don't even know where we are at now.
No, you do know where we're at, because I'm trying to make a point.
2007. I thought you said 2011. 2007, yeah. 11 years ago.
And they won a playoff game, so that means David Garrard has more playoff wins than Matthew Stafford.
All right, kick him out. Kick him out.
No. Because I need him for this next question from Chris D. Gibbons. In honor of Chris Paul and the Rockets' misadventures in Los Angeles, which Lions player would be best suited to mastermind an invasion of an opponent's locker room?
To mastermind or to be the one that I want leading the charge, because it's undoubtedly A'shaun Robinson.
Well, I think A'shaun Robinson is absolutely so. I mean, reports from Wojnarowski is that the Clippers planned like a 3-prong assault. They had their main group going in the back door, but then what was it? They had, let me just find this real quick. So it was James Harvin, Trevor Ariza, and Gerald Green were pushing the locker room. CP3 is going in the other way. And then you had, who was it? Was it Clint? It was Clint Capella was knocking on the main door.
Yeah. And I think a locker room attendant like opened the door and saw it was Clint Capella and then shut it in his face.
Which is what you do when you're confronted by Clint Capella.
Yeah, I totally agree. So it's a shame because I feel like if I wanted somebody to mastermind a 3-prong attack, it would have had to have been Dan Orlovsky with the way that he's breaking down film on Twitter. Because then like at the last second when like the code word for everybody to like make their move would be go score.
I think I want the mastermind behind it all to be Zach Zenner because one, he's a scientist. Two, he's sneaky fast.
No, hold up. You need someone who is you need someone who's personable. You need someone who's a leader of men. And most importantly of all, because this attack was led by Chris Paul, you need someone who's played for the enemy. So I'm just saying, if we're planning this sneak attack in Lambeau Field, I need TJ Lang to lead the way.
That's a very good point. He's going to know the ins and outs of the backstage area.
He's going to know where the secret tunnels are at.
But I don't know if he could lead the charge. He might get injured along the way.
Oh, that's unacceptable.
You know what's not going to happen at Lambeau Field, though, Ryan? They're not going to call the police.
they're not going to call the Popo, as Charles Barkley.
They're not going to call LAPD. I'm sorry, if you don't know what we're talking about, you're just... I'm not going to explain it. The NBA was really stupid on Monday. It was really stupid. Like there were like 3 different games where people wanted to fight each other.
On Martin Luther King Day of all days.
Yeah. There's not a lot of peace to be had. Okay, next question here from John Whitaker. When you eat a bag of Skittles, how do you eat them? Favorite flavor first, least favorite first, random, or other?
My answer is other. I don't like Skittles.
I think with any kind of like fruit flavored candy where you've got like a mix of flavors, I think this question can apply. Cause I would say like I attack Skittles, like I attack Sour Patch Kids in that I like getting multiple different flavors at once. Mm-hmm. And getting them in my mouth. Like I like making a combination.
I think I'm that way too, which is weird because I kind of more understand it with Sour Patch Kids because it's all just like sour and then you get a flavor. But with Skittles, it would kind of make sense to eat them individually, but I don't. I absolutely don't. I pour it. I don't even look to see what colors are going into my mouth.
I think
I throw
the only
like
ones
four or five in there at a time.
Yeah, the only kind of fruit candy I eat like individually are Starburst, because
right.
If you try to eat more than one, that's kind of a problem.
That's weird. Well, you're a weird person.
I don't know. Are you a weird person though? Because like when they come in the bags that are already unwrapped and they're a little bit smaller.
Is that a thing?
I mean, yeah. You've never seen those?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Starburst unwrapped.
It's just the size of a Starburst. The Starburst is so big. It's like, you're just getting like a mouthful of like incredibly hard taffy at that point. It's just really hard to manage it after too.
What better candy?
So answer the question: if it was Starburst, do you go favorite flavors first or least favorite first?
Whatever comes out of the tube, I'll eat in that order.
I don't know. I think I always, to be honest, as I've gotten older, I just want to eat the things that I like and not eat the things that I don't like. So back in the day, I think I would have tried to eat the candy I like least first and then go to the flavors I like. But I think now I would go for all the reds and pinks and then I would just like not eat the yellows. Like I would just like throw them away.
Throw them away? Just give them to someone.
It's peasant food. I don't want that. Eat better candy.
Okay, Evan at Big Slick McDick asks us, "Hey guys, love the show. Just wanted to call in and request The Ocean by Led Zeppelin. Thanks, you guys rock."
Damn it, I'm being adequate. I was going to have that queued up on my phone, but I don't.
Very adequate.
Did you see that he sent off a chain reaction of people doing that?
I didn't.
Of people requesting songs?
Yep, John Whitaker. "Hey guys, love the show. Just wanted to call it and request Ocean Man by Ween. Thanks, you guys rock."
Why are they all Ocean?
I don't know. At Kaonoshi. "Hey guys,
you
love the show. Just wanted to call in and request Ocean Size by Jane's Addiction." Derek.
Okay.
Steve Tabor. "Hey guys, love the show.
Hold up. We can't do this. You're derailing my podcast. Stop doing this.
All right. We all deserve credit. All made me laugh.
No. Okay, please stop. I need to keep. Okay, James at Cookie991 asking us, "If I go to a Lions game next season, what else is there to see and do in Detroit, and where should I stay?" So James, if I recall, is not of this country. So Ryan, why don't you give him the lowdown on downtown Detroit?
Plenty of great places to stay. I actually stayed down there this weekend because my friend comped us a room at Greektown. You can stay at any one of the fine hotels that are associated with the casinos, whether or not it's Motor City or MGM or the Greektown Casino. The Greektown Casino is going to be the most like centrally located to a lot of the places where you can eat and also kind of visit because it's pretty close to Campus Martius. So Campus Martius has kind of developed into a nice little area down in Detroit. They've done a lot to kind of build that up. But I mean, if you want to eat anywhere, the two places I'm going to suggest are either Sweetwater or Hot Taco.
Hard yes on both of those. Yeah. I would also add, like, you want to stop at least one Greektown Euro place once. I don't think they do Euros, but like Santorini's is usually pretty good. I also really like Pegasus, and I'm partial to New Parthenon. They shut down my favorite Euro place in Greektown, though, so I'm kind of up and down. I would say Pegasus if you want to get like Euros, but you definitely want to hit up the Greek food at least once there. I would also say, like, if you want kind of a classier place too, hit up the London Chop House.
Yeah, I've never been there myself. I've heard good things. The one other thing that I've yet to check out, though, that is new down there is Founders in Detroit.
Yeah, that's right. We got a Founders branch now in Detroit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, a little bit, not out of the city, but kind of like on the outskirts, Gus's World Famous fried chicken.
Well, now you're just going to places you could get from other parts of the country. But yeah.
Yeah, that's true. But man, it's good. So whatever.
You like it? What about Kuzu's? What about that?
Chicken and waffles? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, do that.
That's always good.
One thing I think it's worth pointing out is that neither of you brought up Coney dogs, and I think you can skip out on the Coney dog in Detroit. I think it's super overrated.
Like, I mean, if you do want to go for one, I would say probably Lafayette or Nationals, but yeah, I mean, it really depends how much you're hankering for hot dogs. I've never really needed to be like, I really need a hot dog. Even here in LA with like loaded hot dogs or whatever. Like,
it took 2.5 years, Chris, but we finally found common ground. That was the best take you've had. Best steak you've had on this podcast.
I mean, I'll get one in a pinch, but I'm just not like, I really need a good hot dog. Like, there's been this like place in LA called Dirty Dogs that I want to go check out sometime. But at the same time, I just, every time I think about going there, I'm like, yeah, but I don't really want a hot dog.
Yeah. Same thing with Pink's. It's stupid. You should wait that long for a hot dog.
I was going to say though, can't you, I mean, if it's somebody who's coming from, you know, across the pond, like, they've never had like a Coney dog. I mean, it's worth it to at least try it, right? I mean,
it's just like a bratwurst, except worse.
Detroit versus everybody.
Okay, let's get a question in here from the main man and undo all the goodwill I had with Jeremy. How bad did Jeremy's feelings get hurt when his poll took a turn? Don't ask questions you don't want the answer to.
All right, this is in reference to I wrote that long article about Matt Patricia and his defense, and I didn't know if I wanted to release it after the games on Sunday or Monday morning, and I always know never to put a joke answer in a poll, but I did it anyways, and so my poll was, when do you want me to drop this article, after the game, Monday morning, or never I hate you, and never I hate you ran away with it. Yeah, no, I had a feeling that was probably going to win. But I love my followers, even if they hate me. It's all about love in 2018.
Darren Ramey, 5 mozzarella sticks a day for life, or the Lions never win the Super Bowl?
Whoever this is just became enemy of the show for this question.
Are you going to answer it?
I don't want to.
It's a tough choice.
It absolutely is a tough choice. For the rest of my life, 5 mozzarella sticks? Oh, God.
We have a lot of questions remaining in the mailbag about Matt Patricia. In particular, what do you think his staff is going to look like? I don't want to even start speculating on it right now.
Yeah, and we'll talk about it once it's official that he gets hired. And I'm also, this week, I'm going to put out an article of who I think might be defensive coordinator, might be in the run for it. So we're not going to talk about it today, but we'll, you know, check the site. And once things happen, we'll talk about it here. But here's what happens. Okay, first of all, it depends on how long it takes for the Lions to win the Super Bowl. If it's next year, then I eat 5 mozzarella sticks a day for this entire year, kill myself after they win the Super Bowl.
Jesus. I was just about to get on to another question here, actually on something kind of tangential to the coaching stuff, but you just had to take it to a grim place.
It's a grim place because apparently right now Detroit is blowing up because
what's going on here? Like Slack, I'm looking over at Slack and Ryan's in it now too. Apparently there's like a giant meteor about to destroy Detroit.
No, there was like a flash of light and a big crash that happened in Detroit. Now I see
a giant meteor about to destroy it.
Oh, it already did. Everyone's dead.
Ryan, are you there? Are you dead?
I'm here, but what in the world? I don't know. I thought it was like car headlights. I don't know.
Did you hear a crash or no?
I don't think so. I'm not going to act like I did.
We'll play back the tape.
We'll play back the tape and we'll hear Fife barking.
Yeah. It's actually the son of Krypton. We're actually getting Batman versus Superman part 2.
Oh, Lord.
Right in downtown Detroit where it was filmed. I did want to get onto this question here from Derek from Steez Tabor, if we can keep the, you know, if the connection still holds up and the planet isn't actually doomed. Everyone has been focused on the fate of Jim Bob Cooter. What about Marciano? Does Pride of Detroit think he'll be retained, given how strong the special teams has been under his tutelage?
I wouldn't see why not. I can't imagine that's, you know, when a new head coach comes in, they obviously like their own staff in there, but I can't imagine a new special teams coach is going to be high on Matt Patricia's list of things to do. And this, I mean, yeah, yeah. How can you argue with the results?
Yeah, this is the first time I've heard about people kind of hand-wringing about Jim Bob Cooter. I guess my hot take is, like, he's... I know he had a really hot first year, but he's kind of replaceable.
We've talked about this before. I'm still not sold on the idea of keeping Jim Bob Cooter. The only reason I would be is that we're already kind of late into the coaching process, you know, the picking up coach. The Bears have finished essentially their head coaching search from top to bottom. The Lions are just going to be starting at the beginning of February. I don't know if I want them to blow everything up right away. And I mean, if things don't work out, you can blow things up next year. I mean, waiting one more year isn't the worst thing in the world. And I think Ryan and I have expressed this other fear about Matt Patricia, is that he's been with the Patriots his entire career. Does he really have a lot of pull with guys outside of that organization? Can he pull in a guy that he maybe doesn't have personal experience with? I don't know.
Any thoughts, Ryan? Are you running from the asteroid?
I'm not running from the asteroid. I'm on board with Jeremy. I know you mentioned this during the Facebook Live that I kind of watched that you and Mike put on Sunday night, but the idea about the Patriots linebackers coach.
Mm-hmm. Yes. We're talking Brian Flores.
Yes. Here's what makes me think that maybe this might be a legitimate thing. The ESPN article, I know how much stock you want to put into that, whatever, but I do think that one of the things that the article pointed out was how Bill was kind of so to speak, like taking like the coordinators like under his wing a little bit to like kind of like coach them up about like how to like, you know, go through like the interview process and everything to like mm-hmm. try to find like a head coaching job. And I wonder if like Bill would do like Patricia a solid for a guy who's been with him as long as he has, and, you know, like let a linebacker coach go, because technically the Lions wouldn't have the right to interview him, right? Unless the Patriots gave them permission. Because that's a lateral move.
Well, no, he'd become the offense or the defensive coordinator, wouldn't he? Isn't that what you're saying?
But what I'm saying is that the NFL only recognizes two different distinctions, right? I think it's only head coach and coordinator. So I think that a move from linebackers coach to defensive coordinator is considered a lateral move. I think that's the rule.
I
could be wrong.
I don't think that's true, but what's worth also discussing is the Patriots are going to have a void at defensive coordinator. And I think Brian Flores is considered the top choice to get that job. And obviously he's also still in the run for the Cardinals head coaching position, but we're kind of getting into defensive coordinator talk.
We're kind of going where I didn't want to go. Yeah. Okay. Let me take two more questions here. Mike Holman, how do you see Clemson defensive line returning to school affect our draft plans?
Well, it can't help, right?
I'm trying to get Alex Reno to commit to coming back on a show so we can actually talk about the draft. I'm kind of getting the sense here that like none of us are ready to really kind of interrogate the draft just yet.
I haven't quite turned that corner, but I know of this news, and I know a lot of people were slotting one, if not both, two Clemson guys to the Lions in the first two rounds. Obviously, it's not going to happen now, and with less guys on the board like that, it obviously hurts their chances to land some defensive talent. But, you know, we're still very far away from understanding where these guys are going to go anyways.
Troy Kilgore, what's the most rewarding thing about being a journalist?
It's a weird question. You're the closest one to being a journalist, I think, Chris.
There is no reward. It's just hell.
Is that what your friend taught you, Rob Parker?
No, that's what I've learned through the best teacher of all, pain. Thank you for listening to the Pride Detroit PODcast. We are on iTunes and Stitcher. Our main theme was produced by Ryan Shepherd. You can find him on Twitter and on SoundCloud at I am Brian Shepherd, IamBrianSHEPARD. Thanks a lot to him. Check out his stuff. He's been great. He gave us Victory Monday, so go check him out. That's I am Brian Shepherd. And thank you for everyone who keeps listening and makes us one of the greatest Lions podcasts possible. Y'all are awesome. See you, Star Side. We're watching HQ trivia now.
This is Chris's first time playing, and
please shave your face. Why is this guy hot? I don't get it. Why is everyone losing his mind? This guy's got elf ears. I know I'm not a looker, but come on. Like, I got standards.
He's got the.
I'd think about it if he shaved his face.
Write my semiotics paper.
And then like, up. Facial hair should just be used in small amounts.
Whoa, someone doesn't like Matt Patricia.
That's a little different, because Patricia, I think, like...
He's from the old country.
A, he's from the old country. B, like, he's not in a position to be admired for his looks. When does this thing start?
It'll be another minute or two. There's a lot of chat beforehand. They usually voice cracking. They try to stall. They get a bunch of people in the game.
Yeah. There's almost a million people in here. What's he waiting for? Swipe that away. Wasn't this guy being like held hostage by like the guy who makes the show?
Kind of. Here we go.
Is this a trick question already?
No. What is this?
It's got to be quiet car. I'm assuming. I've never heard of this. Favorite way to get around? He'll chat you up. When you're in the quiet car, you better
be quiet. Keep those lips zipped. Trust me, they will cut you if you're chatting. Why?
That was a really tough question for Q1. I'm sorry. 31,000
people picked sports argument car.
That's the Rob Parker car.
Look at the that was just a process of elimination. There's obviously not a sports argument car, and the meet and greet car, you think that's a silent one where you meet and greet people?
I've been on an Amtrak before. You're not there to meet anyone.
Right.
New Yorkers have flippers, but I mean
two of them, one on each hand.
Hey, I'm walking here.
Danny DeVito.
Danny DeVito's not a New Yorker.
But he did play the Penguin and he had flippers. No flippers on
New Yorkers. Mm, that's true. Yeah, we're really just going to how many people just pick pinball? Why? Why? Why would you do that to yourself? What's Apple? Oh,
I have no idea.
Oh, wait. Where's epaulettes? Oh, fuck. I picked the wrong question. Oh, I can't change my question before the time's up? Fuck. Nope. Okay, I'm out.
I don't know what epaulettes are.
It's the shoulder thing. I thought both them had it, so I'm out. Okay.
I guess right.
I didn't get it. I didn't understand the question. You're eliminated. Yeah, fuck you.
Are you still in, Ryan?
No, I guess the sun made raisin girl.
I didn't realize, like, I thought I could like change my answer before the time was up, but
nope.
Jesus.
I tried to do that once too. You learn pretty quickly.
No, fuck you. Fuck this. This is stupid.